Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Dark Dry Drew here on this Thursday, November the 8th, 2018. It is 4 p.m. New York time. That's 1 p.m. Los Angeles time, 9 p.m. London time. And Drew's here with Mimi, the Wonder Psychic Dog, who's going to be sharing all kinds of cool stuff today. There she is.
That's right.
How's she doing there? All right. A happy little dog. I like that. It's always hard to get the dog to look at the camera, but that's right. We'll let her go on that one.
Yeah.
So
I opened the window, so she's fixated on what's outside.
Yeah. That's always going to be the case. Anything, sight or smell especially, is going to be a big thing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, hey, it's been a couple weeks. How you doing?
I've been doing well, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, last week was out, but this week I'm back, ready
right.
for more.
Very good.
Had lots of ideas brewing during the duration. So yeah,
I like that, because we're always looking for new thoughts, new things to add to the program, make things more interesting, more fun, more exciting. So yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So you came up with an interesting topic idea today. It's one you actually voiced to me a number of weeks back when we were first having our introductory conversation with each other, getting to know each other, seeing if it was a fit, because you mentioned that one of your big interests is the fact that so much of processed food, you know, what often passes as American food, is just not terribly healthy, which is true. Most of it is not terribly healthy. And in fact, Joel Elston, who does the morning podcast on Thursdays with me, it's been a while since we've talked about this, but I remember one time he told me a story about a client that he was working with. He's a life coach. He also has a therapeutic background, but he's also a very hands-on kind of a guy. And one of the things that he does is, if he thinks it's warranted, he will actually take his client out into the world and do some certain thing with them. Well, he had this one client that was a family of very, very overweight people, severely overweight people. And so as part of the therapy, he decided to take them to the supermarket. And I love what he said to them. He said, okay, we've walked into the supermarket. Now, you can buy anything that's on the outside wall. That's all you can buy. You're not allowed to buy anything in the middle. And I thought that kind of summarized it pretty well.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've been shifting to. And sort of what I was realizing was that a lot of what I thought was healthy really isn't when you start to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... because it seems that sort of the common perception is that, you know, if you don't eat well, you'll be overweight. But what I was realizing in the past few months, really, is all of the other effects that kind of are subtly in there, like the mood changes and things like that. That's sort of, I cut out, like I was saying in another one, I cut out sugar and caffeine and having withdrawals from that. You know,
if
you're having withdrawals from something, then it kind of says a bit. And so that's sort of been on my mind a lot about what I was taught was healthy, you know, through media as a child. And then now being like, well, you know, just because it's a fruit or a vegetable doesn't mean it's healthy if it's in a package, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've kind of been trying to figure out how much of an impact that has in terms of the law of attraction, because if you're trying to align yourself with a certain path, and then there's things that you don't even realize that are having a negative impact on you. It's
right.
Like, where do you begin to go find all that? And so that's what I've been trying to figure out lately, is like which aspects of my life. Like, for one of the things is I haven't had a sleep schedule since middle school.
Mm-hmm.
So over 8 years.
Yep.
And for me, I never really cared. It was just not something that happened. But when we went on a trip to Europe, my family, and when we got back, everyone was horribly jet-lagged, except for me. And that's when I realized that I've just, my entire life has been jet-lag, since I don't have a sleep schedule. So now I'm like, okay, I need to start getting a sleep schedule, start eating healthier, stuff like that. It's sort of been creeping up on me. But, like, trying to align all of that with, you know, the vision I have for where I want to go.
Makes sense. Well, you asked if there's a law of attraction component, and the quick answer is, I don't care what you're talking about in life, there's a law of attraction component. It ties in with everything, because literally we attract everything into our lives. So I mean, as I look around your room, everything that I see in your room and everything that you see in my room here, we attracted it. I mean, we can talk about how we went out and bought it or somebody gave it to us. We attracted it. We attracted all of it. And that's just the things in the room. So literally anything that's in our lives, yeah, we attract. And we know also the basics of how the law of attraction works, you know, what we focus on, what we think about, what we develop big feelings about and so forth. That tends to be what we attract, particularly taking into account whether we're focusing on the thing itself or the lack of the thing. That's a big factor that's involved. But, you know, overall, it's our focus that's making the difference. And so, yeah, I mean, you mentioned television commercials. If you're focusing on television commercials and you're focusing on them a lot, guess what? You're going to attract stuff that's related to those television commercials. It may not be that particular product, but you're going to attract stuff that's of the same vibration, as they say, right? The same kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the quick answer. And that isn't even all that quick.
I mean, there's so much to it. And I think that, especially because a lot of those ideas are kind of implanted when people are young. I think that's when a lot of my perception of, like, because I never had a nutrition or health class, which I realized probably would have helped a lot a long time ago.
Maybe not. But when I was in school, they had what they called health class, and let me tell you, it was useless. It was absolutely useless.
That's true. They do seem to keep contradicting past studies over and over again. Something's good, something's bad. And that's where I finally, because I used to be like totally science-based and just like, well, what do the studies say? But now I'm realizing that the best study is to just do it yourself and see what feels best.
That's a really good approach. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd taken it all into my own hands and like cataloging everything and seeing. So on the mirror exercises, I'm trying to be more consistent, but I have done it a bit.
Oh, good for you.
The things like that. Yeah. Just trying to, all the small steps are what really seem to be important in the long run.
They are.
The everyday things.
In fact, again, talking with Joel this morning, one of the things that Joel and I were kind of harping on is not only having the small step exercises, but doing them frequently. Because the frequency really makes a difference. I mean, there was a time, you know, when I first started with Law of Attraction back in 2007, at that point, if I could do one process for 1 minute, that was a victory because that's how, you know, how far I had to go, how much work I had to do.
Yeah.
Today, I'm doing daily processes, but I'm realizing that there are some of them I need to be doing throughout the day. You know, it isn't enough. You mentioned mirror exercises. Yeah. I'm doing mirror and the other equivalents of it, and I'm trying to do them regularly throughout the day. I mean, today I had to go out. I didn't have to go out to take a walk. I wanted to take a walk because that's one of my high points of the day, but I also had to go out and run a couple of errands and so forth. And during all of that, I'm spending my time focusing on the equivalent of mirror exercises or affirmations or, you know, focusing on what it is I want to attract and so forth. And I'm realizing that the more that I do that, the better I get at doing what Neville Goddard calls hardening the idea. Because you start off with like this kind of a nebulous feeling or thought, something that you're trying to attract.
Yeah.
But it's nebulous. It's just, you know, you got like a little tiny bit of a framework to it and maybe some idea of what it feels like. Over time, if you keep working with it and keep playing and trying it and, you know, refining it and do it again and do it again and so forth, you start turning it into a more coherent, cohesive whole. And that's the hardening aspect. That's where you're turning it into reality. So for me, I think it's mainly about how quickly you want stuff to happen. But the more that you put into getting yourself into that focused mindset of focusing on what you want, the quicker stuff happens because you harden it faster. You make it real faster. And that's what I'm noticing lately.
I like that. Yeah, I guess that's the next step because I've had not all of the good habits are easy to make stick.
Tell me about it.
It always seems to come down to, like, for instance, when I was at the dentist, like, 2 years ago, they're like, do you floss? I'm like, no, I brush my teeth and that's it. And they're like, well, all of your back teeth, you know, in sci-fi movies when they're like, Captain, shields are down 50%. They're like, that's your teeth. And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, if you don't floss, all of your back teeth are going to have cavities. And that was the motivator that, you know, I don't want to lose all my teeth. So I've flossed every single day since then. But then it's eventually the positive benefits outside of not losing my teeth have begun to show up, where my gums look nice and teeth look nice. That took a while to get there. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for you.
Yeah. So trying to get that motivation to some of these other things. Mm-hmm. Meditating also. I've had trouble doing consistently, but I always feel better when I do it.
Well, that's honestly. Good. That's good. I actively don't do traditional meditation. I was talking about that both with Joel and with Cindy yesterday. What I do is alternative forms. I do what they call a walking meditation, and I do what I call meditation, but it's more like going to sleep in the middle of the night when you woke up. I take advantage of the fact that I woke up. Oh, geez, I'm awake in the middle of the night. I really don't want to be awake now. Well, this is a good time because my mind is very susceptible. It's very open. So I'm just going to just do some visualizing and imagining and so forth, and do that for about 5 minutes, and all of a sudden I'm asleep. So it's a good way to go back to sleep. That and the walking meditation is where, especially if I've got something going on that I don't like and I need to just kind of shake it off. I've done this for years, but I didn't realize it was meditation. I would get up and I would pace and pace the house. And as I'm pacing, I'm shaking my arms and shaking my hands, like, come on, shake it off. Kind of like a dog shaking, you know, when they got water on them or something like that. The same kind of thing. And somebody said to me, well, that's a walking meditation. I said, really? Cool. You mean I've been meditating all these years and I didn't know it?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. But I can't just sit down in a chair and just meditate and focus on my breath. I mean, I lose interest in that so quickly. But the alternatives I can do.
I'll have to try that. That's 'cause the one I've been doing is a body scan. And it's I have an app on the phone and it's just it's guided. So focusing on your, you know, from top of the head and then moving down slowly and just breathing out all the tension.
Right.
But yeah, that's, that seems to be, if I can focus, because there are times where my mind's just too, because I've always had like a really hyperactive mind, like not quite ADHD, but enough that I get sidetracked pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. I know what that's like.
And yeah, so trying to meditate, because my mom took me when I was like 14 or so. There's the Buddhist center nearby, and we went there, and I enjoyed it, but it was like 40 minutes, and that was a pretty heavy intro, so I wasn't like scared off, but I just wasn't, you know, I wasn't like super keen on it,
right.
So the starting was 7 minutes, and then now I'm at 14 minutes. And that's like a little bit more of a struggle because the pacing's a bit different. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
By the way, you made me think, and I want to mention this to our listeners as well. About a week ago, Cindy Chavez led us in a guided meditation that you can pick up on the podcast. Just go look back about 13 shows back, and you'll find the guided meditation that she had us do. It was about a 20-minute meditation. And it was so effective that my wife was listening to it while she was doing something else. I don't remember what she was doing. And she got about 10 minutes into it and found herself falling asleep. And she couldn't do that because she had to go do something. So she had to shake herself out of it and go. Meanwhile, I'm sitting here. I'm running my board here, right? Because I got all these things I'm trying to run in order to do, you know, the live stream to the Law of Attraction group and the podcast recording and you and I doing our exchange and so forth, the volumes. And about 8 to 10 minutes into it, I found myself going, and I, no, I got to do the board.
Yeah.
So it was very effective.
That is the one thing where I have just about fallen asleep a few occasions. And so getting that balance right between relaxation and sleep. Yeah, definitely.
From what I've heard, it's actually not a bad thing to fall asleep. And obviously you do want to be able to maintain your alertness and so forth so that you can, you know, go on with your day instead of falling into a nap state. But it's just not a bad thing. It's just not desirable. Often we want to get on with our next task for the day after we're done with the meditating. But like you said, that's a balance. Yeah. That just comes with practice.
Yeah, and that's what I'm kind of realizing is that most things in life that are important are kind of a slow burn and that it's just persistence.
Yep.
So coming to terms with that.
So let's go back to food for a minute, because I thought you brought up a good topic. I'm curious to know, were there particular aspects of what's in food, what's in processed food, that through your experience you found, well, I've got to stay away from this stuff? Or was it just that you were doing reading or you watched a movie? Or, you know, what's been your motivator where all that's concerned?
So I've been trying different diets for the IBS symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them worked until the low FODMAP one is like the best thing I've found. And even that isn't like a, it's better than everything else, but still not like a good baseline for where I'd want to be. So starting with that, cutting out sugar, caffeine is possible irritant. And so the list is like a good place to start. And then from there, I've been trying new things. And then, like I had a beer and I was sick for like 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, I know I can't have beer. So I, no more beer, even though I loved all the Belgian and German imports. So had to cut it out. And then caffeine and all that. And then also the fact that, when I cut out all that and did the bone broth diet for 2 weeks, I lost 20 pounds and looked human again.
Mm.
And it wasn't all necessarily like just because I wasn't like super overweight, but I looked inflamed. And one of the things I noticed, and I guess it sounds kind of odd, but my belly button used to be sensitive to the touch. Which when I had a girlfriend, she poked me and I'm like, ow, like that doesn't feel right. And I never really questioned why. I was just like, oh, you know, that's it. But after having cut out all this, there's no sensitivity there, which to me says, intestinal inflammation or whatever else, gut, inflamed from all the crap food essentially.
Right.
So that was like one of the first things that really resonated where I'm like, okay, even though this diet is kind of a hellish nightmare in the beginning with the withdrawals and like I can't really eat out at most restaurants because I can't do garlic and onion, which seems to literally be in like all the meat. Because most of the, even if you eat out nowadays, a lot of the meat and stuff's prepackaged. Because I went to Chili's right. And I was like, oh, can I just get like the plain chicken? And they're all, oh, it comes prepackaged, pre-marinated.
Mm.
Even eating out where I would think like at a semi-decent restaurant that you find quality ingredients, even there, it's like, it's still processed food.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, all right, I that's why now I've been doing pancakes almost every day, which when I was a kid, I used to eat like the kind of unhealthy ones, but now it's, 2 bananas, 2 eggs, 1/4 cup of gluten-free flour. It's basically, it's the only thing different from a smoothie is the fact that, it's a breaded item. So I do that in smoothies and I'm eating, getting some fruits and then, cataloging everything. That would be like my number one learning lesson is to just catalog everything because it seems like you can remember, but when you have it all written out, you're like, okay, on this day I did this and I'm feeling better now. Cause I mean, this would work with, I feel like a lot of people's health problems are definitely related to diet and they don't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And by health problems, the big one that I've been thinking about is mood disorders. It's a lot of young people. I mean, the suicide rate for young people keeps going up, at least from what I've heard.
True.
And apparently it historically seems to have been worse for men, but from what I read, it's getting worse for women now.
Mm.
And I think it's partly due to technology, social media, and stuff like that. But I think that the American diet is kind of like finally taking its toll on everyone. But no one, like in school, you're not taught to eat healthy to like have a positive effect on your mood. Instead, it's just like, oh, you want to look good. You want to look like all the models and the celebrities and
really? Oh my goodness. Wow.
So I've tried to figure out like how to get that knowledge to young folks, because for me it's like, well, if I had known that, then how to suppress the mood disorder stuff, the depression kind of symptoms. So all of that's been a lot better lately, which mm-hmm. it was a problem for years. So yeah. If you're having withdrawals.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that the thing that got me was, like, if I'm having withdrawals from food, like, who has withdrawals? Drug addicts have withdrawals. American food is basically drugs at that point if you're addicted to it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was. So cutting all that out, I'm like, okay, this is poison. This is going to kill me if I don't cut it out. That's kind of how, yeah. I guess that's a bit of a ramble, but...
No, that's all right.
Kind of stuff that's... Yeah.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. No, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I do think that because we live in a deliberate creator or even non-deliberate creator universe, a creator universe where we're always creating everything that comes into our lives.
Yeah.
Because of that, there's also the thought process that's important because it all begins with a thought process. And certainly being aware of what you eat plays a direct role in your thought process because you think about it, right? You think about the foods, you think about how they're affecting you. Do you like the flavor? Do you like how you feel after you eat them? Are you associating with this, that, or the other condition? I mean, it's all part of the thought process. So it's actually pretty vital information to know, you can do something by looking at the way your diet is and restructuring it and deciding that you're going to change it. I just wouldn't want to overlook the role of the thought process because I think the thought process is where it all starts. I think I'm just kind of adding on to what you're saying that, you do want to look at the diet, but start with the thought process first. It's kind of like what Abraham says. Abraham at one point in their book, I think it's the book, The Astonishing Power of Emotions. In that book, they have a number of little subsections that are about different kinds of scenarios that are common, typical in the lives of people who come to sit in their chair, their hot seat. And one of them is about weight issues. And they tell this really interesting, it's not so much a story as it is sort of a story/analogy, kind of like a generic story that's very typical rather than one particular person's story. And in this story, they talk about how there's a person who is dealing with weight issues, and they're kind of depressed one day, and they feel like they need a pick-me-up, and they're walking by an ice cream parlor, and they said, I think I'm going to go into the ice cream parlor and get some ice cream. That's always a good pick-me-up for me. And then instantly they start having a fight with themselves, like, oh, well, no, I can't really do that, because if I have the ice cream, that's going to feed me all this food that I don't want, and I'm going to put on weight instead of taking weight off, and it becomes this ongoing thing that goes on. Abraham's response was, actually, you're kind of doing the whole thing backward. What you got to realize is that it all comes down to what you're thinking about and how you're thinking about it. How are you feeling about it? And they make the really astonishing claim that if you walk into an ice cream parlor, and this is me paraphrasing, this is not exactly what they said in the book, but it's the gist of it. If you walk into an ice cream parlor and you, on some level, are resonating with the idea that if you have ice cream that day, it's going to add to your weight problem, you can take it to the bank, it will add to your weight problem. If, on the other hand, you have a completely different mindset and you're walking with a mindset that you're just going to have and enjoy ice cream, it's not going to affect you in any way in terms of your weight, you don't even think about the weight, it's not a big deal, it won't add anything to your weight. And they make the astonishing claim that if you had 1,000, and I can't even imagine this, if you had 1,000 tubs of ice cream and you went in with the idea that this is going to be bad for you, it'd probably kill you. You'd put on 5,000 pounds. But if you went in and you had 1,000 tubs of ice cream and you had 1,000 tubs of ice cream, presuming you could actually eat all that and that without getting sick, if you could do that with the mindset that it was all going to be fine, you wouldn't put any weight on because it's all the mindset, they say, is what's making the difference. And it's a pretty outrageous claim when you think about it. But it does make a very valid point. The mindset drives everything. And the simple fact is, I mean, if you've got a weight problem and you go into an ice cream parlor, you could try to pretend to yourself that, oh, no, this isn't going to affect me at all. But if you've got a weight problem, I guarantee it's going on in the back of your head. It's just, I mean, you haven't turned that off yet. Otherwise, you wouldn't still have a weight problem, right? So you can try to talk yourself into it, but you're still going to go in there. You're going to put on the weight because you still believe you're going to put on the weight. It's just guaranteed.
Yes. Aligning your mindset and your goals. That's I'd say that's the takeaway.
Yeah. And I think you also have to do it in what is true to your own alignment. You have to recognize where you're coming from. You know, I mean, if you're still, it's kind of like being a, you mentioned an addiction. It's kind of like being a drug addict or an alcohol addict or a sex addict or a gambling addict. If you're still in the midst of it, if you're still learning to come out of it, you're still vulnerable to it. So you don't go into any kind of a approach based on, well, this is going to solve my problem for me. I'm 100% sure. And the proof is in the pudding because I've already lost the weight, because you haven't yet. You know, you could try to talk yourself into it, but until you clear up what's going on in your head, you know, you can make the bravado all you want to, but you're going to basically set yourself up to failure. Whereas if you go in with the idea, well, I'm going to make some improvement, I'm going to change my lifestyle, and I'm going to change my thought process, I'm going to improve, I'm going to take steps, and you approach it that way, now you have a much better chance of winning and making improvement and seeing tangible gains, because you're not expecting an all or nothing. All or nothing is a long step to take.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the challenge for me with a lot of this, the dietary stuff. The fact that, well, for one, I'd say the stomach problems, and I'm sure there are other problems like this that are a challenge. It's something where you can't if I injured my arm and I was moving it in certain ways, I'm like, oh, that hurts. I need to, you know, move it back like this more. I can't do that. But with the stomach problems, it's like 3 days is the period in which I could get sick from something.
Mm, wow.
Yeah. So I have to, waiting 3 days to check the effects of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's like, do I eat the exact same thing all 3 days except for one new item and then hope that, you know? And so it's like, when you're in the moment, it's a lot harder to do all of that.
Yeah.
To kind of eat the same thing every day and to run tests like that. So trying to find sort of whatever motivation, I guess the small positives that come along the way, those are really the important thing. It's not, like you're saying, it's not all or nothing where you're like, okay, I'm better now. It's like, I am better than I was yesterday.
Right.
That is success.
Yes. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
By the way, we have a couple of comments. First of all, Amanda said hello. Hello, Amanda. And Sarah said, yes, processed foods and refined sugar always make me so unmotivated, sluggish, tired, and in a brain fog, she says.
Yeah, the brain fog thing. My mom was talking to me about that. I don't fully know if I have actually had it or not. I do know that eating certain things, the sluggish part, that one's I feel that for sure, especially with most American foods, really. The brain fog, have you experienced that, the brain fog?
I haven't had severe IBS symptoms in a number of years. I did for quite some time, probably for about 15 years, something like that. And during that time period, I could very well have had brain fog. I know that was a period of time where I was just kind of fighting on four or five different fronts. So asking me if I had a brain fog is asking me what did you do on that particular front on that particular day? I couldn't tell you. I don't remember.
Yeah. That is pretty much what I told my mom. I'm like, well, I mean, could I not focus a lot of the time? Yeah, but was that due to the stomach problems? Was it due to the relationship problems? Was it due to living with two sociopaths at the time? Was it essentially it's like the answer is all of these things are troubling you.
Right.
And you want to minimize all of them and eventually, get rid of the bad stuff and align yourself with the good stuff, find your vision. And so that's, I guess it was just a learning lesson that it takes a long time and lots of, like we're saying, persistence and dedication, even when it is looking bad or, two steps forward, four steps back, which with stomach problems seems to be, for me, that's kind of a lot of it goes.
And I'm impressed that you actually stuck to the, what they used to call for me an elimination diet, but for you, it's keeping tracking what you've been eating. Because I was really bad at that. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why it took me so long to figure out what was going on with me. Although I did find, and this is not something I could have identified at the time, but I identified after the fact by looking back and realizing it was true. I I've often said here on the podcast that I have a lot of trouble connecting to my inner being and getting signals and getting messages and so forth. And my co-hosts are regularly pointing out all the different ways that I'm getting signals and messages and I'm just not giving myself credit for it. Well, okay, if they're listening in, I have to say mea culpa. Here it is, one more example of how I wasn't really recognizing what it was I was doing, but I was getting signals. Yeah. And the signals that I was getting were partially physical, but they're also partly coming from inside, and they had to do with two primary things. One was water, and two was water, which is another way of saying I had to stay hydrated. If I stayed hydrated, yeah, I did much better, and that's what I focus on now. Even now, I'm not as hydrated as I should be on a regular basis, but I'm a lot better than I was. And I can always tell. I mean, if my gut starts to act up, yeah, it probably has something to do with what I ate. But if I really think about it, have I hydrated myself today? Not as well as I could have, in like 99 times out of 100, you know? So then reach for the cup of water, have the drink.
Yeah.
Move on with the day, you know? It's the simplest thing. But did I get that through an elimination diet? No, not really. I got it through paying attention to inside. So I guess I'm saying, to whatever extent you feel you can, pay attention inside. Because even somebody like me who thinks like he doesn't have much of a connection, turns out he has a pretty good connection.
Yeah. That's a good point. A lot of it's kind of, it can be, for me, one of the, so my best friend's in Europe, and he's been traveling. Mm-hmm. He was in Prague. And now he's in the country of Georgia waiting for his work visa to go through in Prague.
Wow.
And he messaged me because he was in a bit of a state of crisis, just having a hard time with it all.
Mm.
Like, dude, I don't, you know, this isn't super enjoyable and it's been kind of rough. Because it's a lot of just sitting down at park benches waiting for the Airbnb to open, stuff like that.
Mm.
And I'm like, well, here's a good benchmark for you. Back home, for instance, one of our friends is just sitting around doing nothing, not working, just living off an inheritance for years.
Mm.
And would you rather be doing that? And he's like, no, what I'm doing is much better than that. I'm like, well, there you go. So start looking at the positives.
There you go.
It's all just there. If you look at it in a negative mindset, it's going to be negative. And so he's like, all right, that's, and it helped him, but. It's one of those things where you have to, you can't just do it once. You got to keep, you know, looking back because,
There's an old cliche about that. I used to be upset about the fact that I had no shoes until I met a man who had no feet.
Yep. Yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of, that's where I've been sort of trying to continue looking inward lately in every capacity, just to kind of. And then also, it's like you never really can compare your life to anyone else in like any meaningful capacity. Because when you start to look at it, it's like, well, you know, where did they grow up? What was their childhood, their background, all of that?
Yep.
What about, you know, because if we're talking years and years of someone's life, everything makes tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I've been kind of trying to figure that out about how to like, take those small steps in my life, and then also to have empathy for others when looking at them and being like, okay, you know, all of the actions they've taken have gotten them to where they are today,
mm-hmm.
whether that's a good or bad place. But just to take them as they are and to not try and to put judgment, sort of, if that makes sense.
I think so. And there are also lots of indicators. I mean, I talked about the connection to inner being, but there are also just plain physical indicators about, you know, giving you clues about what to do or what to look at or, you know, where to consider making changes, that sort of thing. Again, this came from the conversation that I had with Joel during this morning's podcast. He pointed out that there are a number of different figures given as to how many thoughts the average human has in a day. Some say, you know, 60,000, 90,000, 150,000. You know, it varies depending on which authority you're listening to. But whatever the number is, it's a lot. We'll stipulate that it's a lot of thoughts. And yet, if you were able to take inventory of those thoughts every day, the amazing thing is that you find that about 90% of them are the same thoughts you had yesterday. And they're also the same thoughts you had the day before and the same thoughts that you had the day before that. And if you can become cognizant of that, you become aware pretty quickly of what your thought pattern is. Just because you can count on the fact, and a lot of it is because of the way our days go. You wake up in the morning. What do? You get out of bed. You go to the bathroom. Maybe you shave. Maybe you take a shower. And what do you do the next day? You get out of bed. You go to the bathroom. You take shave, take a shower. I mean, you're doing the same kinds of behaviors every day, and thoughts are involved in each one of those behaviors. So, of course, a lot of the patterns are going to be the same from day to day to day. But it does mean that you can kind of look at what's your pattern every day. Where do you spend your attention? Where do you focus most of your time most of the day? And you can actually identify by doing that, how are you focusing your thoughts? After a while, you become pretty aware that, wow, I focus my thoughts pretty consistently around direction X. And it turns out that direction X is not where I wanted to go. I wanted to go in direction Y. Well, okay, now I see the pattern. Now I can do something about it because I know what the pattern is. Now, of course, it means I have to start rewriting my mind a little bit. I have to start rewriting my, changing my behavior. But nevertheless, I know where to go.
I'll try and start cataloging my thoughts a bit more. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting idea. I like that.
Yeah, I think it's more about awareness, mindfulness, as they call it, right?
Yeah.
Just being aware of what you're focusing on. How do you spend your day? A good way to do that, this is something Louise and I like to do. At night, before we go to sleep, we'll often ask each other, so name three good things that happened today, which, of course, is a good way to reproduce positive experiences and play those in your mind and get that kind of programmed in. But it also forces you to go back and replay portions of your day. And what often happens is, especially if there were things that did not go well that day, our tendency at the end of the day is to say we had a bad day because X happened, forgetting that A, B, and C also happened and they were good. Yeah. But when you play the three good things game, you have to go back and remember what they were. And if you play the game well, what you do is not just remember them, but you kind of play them through in your head again. How did it go? How did A go? That A worked out really nice. It was a nice event. It was a nice little piece of the day. How did that play out? And then play out B, and then play out C. And if you take the time to do that, not only are you reinforcing good stuff in your head, but you're also reminding yourself about things that happened that you forgot about. You're pulling stuff out of the back of the mind that kind of was starting to disappear. It's a way of, you talked about cataloging. It's a way of cataloging without actually writing it down. It's just simply doing replays.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'll have to start doing that. When I was in a relationship, we'd do that a bit. Now I guess I'll just talk to my dog. So.
Well, you told me Mimi's very psychic and that you're able to channel her stuff. So, why not?
Yeah, and she's a very good listener, so.
Yeah, pets are wonderful that way. They truly are.
Yeah. I was thinking about how if we didn't have dogs, there really wouldn't be another comparable replacement. There's no substitute for dogs. The way that they are emotionally. Because cats are cool, but they're a lot different emotionally from dogs.
Well, you're talking to a cat person. You realize that.
I think you'd mention. That's why I was thinking about it, because you have cat people and dog people, and it's kind of a different. It's like my best friend's a cat person. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I don't like dogs. They're too touchy and excited and stuff. And for me, it's like, well, that's what I need to balance out the depression and all of that. So.
Well, I like dogs. I just don't want to walk dogs. That's my only thing. I don't have to walk cats. They go take care of themselves. But except for that, I like dogs. I think dogs are great. And the one thing about all pets is that they are so good at giving unconditional love under any circumstance.
Yeah.
And like you say, there can be times where you really need to have that attachment. You need to have that connection. And to know that you can always count on your pet to give you that unconditional love, that unconditional response. It's not, it's not like I'm going to hold you hostage for it. I will give you the licks if you'll give me some food. No, it's just unconditional. Jump up. Hey, I can hardly wait to see you again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, and that's very valuable.
Yes.
So I've been appreciating the value of that. Yeah.
I mean, I actually have a cat. We have two cats, but one of them is named Joy, and he's a he. And Joy has an amazing, I guess he's it's a talent. It's a characteristic, I guess. He, first of all, is the only male cat I've ever seen that grooms a female cat. I've seen female cats, usually mothers, grooming, their babies or their grown-up babies. But this is the first male cat I've ever seen that grooms the cat, which we don't really know what the relationship is. She's either his sister or his mother, one or the other. And she insists on it at times, but he grooms her. And the other thing is, he is an appreciative cat. He's appreciative because you know how cats love to be petted and stroked and so forth. Well, after I've been stroking him for a while, and Louise experiences this with him too, he'll start licking me to say thank you.
Yeah, Mimi does that. That's really... Dogs and cats are interesting in that way, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is, expressing appreciation for being petted. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's... Because she used to be a lot more high energy and rambunctious when she was younger, and now she's kind of like the chill, relaxed elder.
Right.
So when I feed her or let her in, she'll walk in, lick my foot as a thank you, and then move on. So, yeah.
Which, by the way, getting back to food, that's a great way. It's a great antidote for food withdrawal. Have you noticed that?
Yes. Eating dogs and cats?
No. Not eating them. No, I mean the attention that they give you.
I'm kidding.
Because if you're going through some kind of a food withdrawal or any kind of withdrawal, you need to divert your attention. Cats and dogs are wonderful for that. I mean, you can literally divert your attention so much you've forgotten that you were hungry or that you were feeling sick because of the sugar withdrawal or whatever it is. You can just literally forget about it because you're giving all your attention and your love to the dog or the cat.
Yeah, definitely. And you can feel their energy radiating outward, too. Which I like a lot. So.
Yeah.
Because that's interesting that what you're saying about your cat, because I think a lot of animals learn from other animals. Because for Mimi, our first dog was a lab. And so she grew up with the lab kind of as a role model. So in a lot of ways, she acts like a lab.
Oh, really?
But she's this big.
Right.
You know? So... It's that the development and the same full circle going back to the food and stuff. It's just the same where it's like all of the things that the adults do when you're a kid, you don't really realize, you just take it as it is. But then that turns into essentially, I think the only reason that adults exist is because of adults. Like kids are sort of this, like a blank canvas. And then the only reason they grow up is because all these adults, like, throw paint onto this canvas, and then whatever sticks is the adult eventually.
Okay.
So we get rid of all the adults, they'll never, you know, it'll just be kids forever. So, not that that's the goal, but yeah.
But under your model, that means we have a whole bunch of people wandering around who are just blank canvases because nobody's been painting them.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, that was an odd thought that occurred to me the other day.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, on Halloween, I loved Halloween as a kid. That was my favorite holiday.
Oh, really?
I always loved spooky stuff, scary things, and going around in all the scary haunted houses and stuff in the neighborhood. I love that. So I've always tried to do my house up for Halloween and go outside and scare people. And my mom's passing out candy, and I've got a big pig mask on and making noises. And what I realized was that I've been thinking back on memories a lot lately because my memory's been finally starting to, like, go bad, I guess. Like, at the very start of where it's... Because when I was a kid, I could, like, remember everything. Like, every single toy, I knew where it came from, all of that. Like, it was just stuck in my mind. But now, finally, I'm like, I don't really remember that and that. And so I'm starting to, like, not remember things. And so the importance of pictures and memories has been on my mind. And I realized on Halloween how important Halloween was when I was a kid. And then in developing my artistic voice.
Mm.
And so on Halloween, I was just, you know, out there scaring kids, and my mom's passing out candy. And, you know, that was one night for me. But then I realized, like, for a whole bunch of little kids, I was the scary pig man that they'll always remember from Halloween. And so that will be in their minds forever. I will have that role in there. And then I thought about all of the other people that have had roles in my life and how to them it was probably just some small thing, but how important it is when you're a kid, about how meaningful those small things can be. And that's inspired me to, I guess, just continue with all the positivity stuff and trying to get that to others.
You also touched on it indirectly, but it makes me wonder about our topic. You talked about your mom handing out the Halloween candy, which, of course, is, that's like the focal point for Halloween for so many kids growing up. They're going around in their costumes to gather candy together. I wonder, how do we take that into account? How do we quantify that, or how do we calculate that into the overall calculus of what's happening with the diet here in America or even around the world, but especially here in America? Because we're handing out sugar, right?
Yeah. I think that, because I knew some parents that like wouldn't let their kids eat candy when I was a kid, like my friends. They're like, oh yeah, I can only have like one piece or whatever. There was some like monitoring, but for a lot of people that there was one that kind of summed up the whole American vibe for me. There was one lady that came up, because we have like stairs to our yard, and she like came up there with her daughter, and we were like, here you go, here's some candy. And she's like, what? I walked all this way and you won't even give me two pieces of candy? And she's like morbidly obese. And I'm like, really? We're trying to do you a service here. Like, so I get that about the sort of negative aspect. I think that for like it being just one day a year, it wouldn't have too big of an impact. I think it's the more like, because most kids now, I don't think, watch commercials as much.
Mm. Most kids don't watch television as much. I mean, they're on the internet. They're doing social media and doing games, video games and stuff like that.
Yeah. And the ads, you can skip most of the ads nowadays. So when I was a kid, it was like, Trix and the Tiger cereal. It was all cereal. That's what I remember. All the cereal ads.
Frosted Flakes.
Yeah, Frosted Flakes, all of that. And so they always made it kind of fun.
I really hated that stuff. I tried it one time. Like, how could you possibly eat this? It's like, I just eat out of a sugar bowl. That's what it tasted like.
Yeah. And that, well, for kids, it's like, you know, the commercial kind of paints this picture that it's going to be great. And then it's like you actually try it. And it, like you're saying, it literally is basically just sugar, which at that point is basically just drugs, because you're just filling the kid with sugar.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely had a sugar addiction. I think I mentioned it in one of the other ones, that when I was freshman in college, I was doing like 5 sodas a day. And at the time, I was like, I'm like, wow, I look the exact same, so clearly I can handle this. Of course, my horribly depressed, the stomach problems were really bad, but they'd been bad even when I was eating healthy things. So I was kind of nihilistic then. It was like, well, if all of this makes me sick, I'll just do whatever.
Yeah.
But then eventually being like, all right, let's stop, and the elimination diet and the mindfulness from meditating to kind of really be like, okay, how do I really feel?
Yep. Yeah. The sugar thing is a tricky monster. It truly is.
Yeah.
Because it's everywhere. It's in so many different foods. I mean, I continue to be amazed at how many different processed foods sugar gets put into. I mean, I think I'd probably be better off trying to itemize the foods that it's not in, because it'd be a shorter job to do that. Because it's literally in everything, you know?
And then, even in meat.
I mean, you mentioned soda. Well, actually, soda was easy for me to get rid of. I mean, literally, it was simple as can be. Now, it was when I became an adult, but I had a car, and I was fairly young, and you know how it is when you're young, you tend to have cars that don't last very long. Well, I had a car that didn't last very long, and the engine cracked. And when it cracked, I was able to drive it for a little bit, but I had to pour lots of fluid in and so forth. And in the process of doing that, I remember the battery died one time. And I had fortunately, I was near where our mechanic was. So the mechanic looked at it and he says, well, look at all the corrosion on the battery terminals. I said, oh, yeah. Is there anything you can do to get rid of that? He says, oh, yeah, sure. I went over to the Coke machine, pulled out a Coke, opened it up, poured it on the battery terminals, and all the corrosion went away. And I said, what? He says, oh, yeah. And he described how it has, I forget what the acid is. There's an acid in Coke that wipes it all away. He says, can you imagine you're putting that into your stomach? I haven't had a Coke since then. That was enough for me.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
I have not had, I don't ever drink soda. Ever, ever, ever. Because of that one experience.
I tried it. I mean, it is. The other day I had it for the first time in 6 weeks at a, we were at a restaurant with some of my mom's friends, and I'm like, I was, we had been wine tasting, and I'd never done that before. And having, I'm like much lighter now than I was a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And also having not really much experience with wine, all of that adding up, I was just like, I was very messed up, did not anticipate that. So we get to the restaurant, and I'm like, I feel dead. Can I just get some caffeine? And I had, two Cokes in like 3 hours or whatever. I'm like, all right, I feel fine. And then the next 3 days, I was sick for 3 days.
I believe it.
Just feeling awful. And it like turns to sludge. It does not come out well. So I'm like, yeah, no soda ever again. Nothing like that. Just, I haven't even wanted it though after, cause I've been doing the Candida cleanse, which is, suppressing Candida in the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to cause sugar cravings. And I hardly even want sugar now. I use pure maple syrup on the pancakes and dark chocolate chips because those are low FODMAP. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, like, I drink water and then maybe a little bit of lactose-free milk.
It has been a little bit of a challenge for me because my wife is still addicted to sugar. And not just addicted to it, but likes it. So, you know, when you're married to somebody, you can either just ignore them entirely whenever they're having sugar, especially if that's a lot, and that means you're ignoring them most of the time. Not terribly good for the relationship, or you can actually indulge a little bit. You know, so we went through quite a period of time where I was doing a lot of indulging, and it got to the point where it was affecting me physically, and I just couldn't handle it anymore. And so I was begging her, please, we got to cut down on the sugar. And I've been begging her fairly frequently for a few years now, and she actually has cut down quite a bit. I mean, it used to be a dessert after every meal. Now it's like she'll take one little square out of a Cadbury chocolate bar. That's her dessert, you know. So it's definitely shrunk down a lot. But it can be a challenge if you're with somebody who's got the sugar addiction because you still want to be involved with them, you know. But you have to deal with the fact that they've got this thing going on that can affect you.
Yeah. That's. I haven't had to deal with that exact experience, but I'm sure down the line. And, I mean, does it have a negative impact on her, though?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
My wife, when before we met, my wife was bulimic. She had an eating disorder. Today, she's overweight. I mean, she's like the other way, the other side of the spectrum. I mean, she's not grossly overweight, but you know, for the first time in her life, she's got more body mass than she should have. It used to be she was as thin as a rail and not eating healthily that way. Well, that problem she was resolved, but now it's gone the other direction. So, yeah, it definitely has an effect. And she's gotten to the point now where I wondered how long it would take. She went a long time before she started getting upset by the fact that she was putting on the weight. She finally got there, and now it's kind of like stabilized. And I'm sure now that we're through the gardening season, which has been very, very stressful for her, now that we're getting through that and she has some recovery time and so forth, I'm sure she'll be taking steps to, you know, start to reverse the process. But, yeah, it affects you. I mean, it's a challenge to try to maintain your own mindset in the midst of all that. And it's actually a good time to practice to do that. But it's still tough because, you know, if you love that other person, and I love my wife, you feel it with her. You know, you try your best to maintain the boundaries, but you feel it anyway. You just do.
Yeah, and it's tough, especially when it's, you know, like you're saying, it is an addiction, and it's something that you can understand why they, you know, but yeah, trying to be supportive without being, you know, dominating or something. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And I'm always totally respectful about that because I don't want to dominate her at all. If anything, I'm probably too gentle. I'm probably too accommodating, maybe a little bit of an enabler at times, you know, so I probably need to firm up that boundary just a little bit. But, mainly though, it's about me in terms of me taking care of me, because no matter what she's got going on, I can be concerned about her. I can love her. I can hope for better things for her, but I still have to maintain my own boundary. I am responsible for what I'm putting into my mouth. Even if she's preparing the food, I'm still responsible for what I'm putting into my mouth. And that's really what I'm trying to constantly learn more and more to be good at, to just accept responsibility for. You know, she may be having that apple cobbler for dessert, but that doesn't mean I have to have it. I can say no thank you.
Yeah.
And I can be good with that. I can be okay with that.
Yeah.
And she'll totally respect
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, well, it's not always easy, though, if you're out with other people. The example that I always tell people, and this is kind of, when I was a resident advisor mm-hmm. in the dorms
yep.
during college, during our training, we had a sensitivity training day,
mm-hmm.
and they had catered food, and I couldn't eat any of the catered food. So here we were, a sensitivity training where they had no sensitivity to the problems I'm going through. And I'm like, I really don't respect any of you after this. This is just a bunch of pretentious crap. And you don't actually care about everyone. It's just certain groups. Yeah, so that was kind of the benchmark for me of like, all right. Oh, and then what was even worse was then everyone asks like, well, wait, so what can't you eat? What can you eat? And it's like, I don't like talking about this. But it was basically 2 weeks of everyone talking about food, about me having to explain what I can't have, and then not eating the stuff that they catered. And so I'm like, all right. And that kind of prepared me for the rest of that's what I guess that would be. Because I thought about designing some sort of program to help youth with, like, invisible disabilities. Just because a lot of it is, like, it's the slow burn of having to go through it every day. But it's also the annoyance of having to deal with other people in that. And trying to kind of, like, find a way to be at peace with what you're going through. So that when other people do ask, and it's like, oh, why are you like that? It's not, you know, it's not hurtful anymore. You can then approach it from an educational side where you're like, this is what I'm going through. Sometimes you don't notice when people have it. You know, mm-hmm. some people it's obvious. That guy's missing his leg. But for them, it's like they've got something going on inside of them that you can't see. Mm-hmm. So the fact that a whole team of professional coordinators at UC Davis didn't, you know, they couldn't think about that one. I'm like, all right, the world still needs lots of help. So I'll stick around just to help out at the very least.
Well, good for you. I'm glad that you stuck around and decided to hang out. That's a good thing. We're appreciative right. that you're with us. That makes me happy. And I do want to take a moment because we're running out of time. I want to take a moment and remind people who are not yet subscribers to the podcast, please do become subscribers. I mean, this conversation that Drew and I are having is different, of course, from all the others because they're all different, but it's representative because we touch on the topics related to the law of attraction that you don't find too many other law of attraction podcasts doing. Most of them are teaching podcasts, teaching you how to make it work and so forth. And that's fine. That has its place. But we go in a different direction. We go into life. And you don't want to miss any of the life episodes that we're doing. So become a subscriber. Most people know how to do it. But if you don't know how, we've got links in the descriptions, most of the places where this will show up. And there's also links on the homepage at loatoday.net. I've actually simplified the homepage so that it basically has three things. There's a link for Android users, there's a link for iPad and iPhone users, and there's a link to the main homepage. That's about as simple as I know how to make it. You click the right link for your device, and you're subscribed. And then for all of our subscribers, new and existing long-term subscribers, please keep posting out on social media that you're listening to loatoday.net. It is making a difference. And through the laws of social media and the law of attraction, more and more people find out how to get their daily dose of happy. And those are our two promos for the day. So this has been good. Hey, you want to tell us anything? Are you doing anything professionally, or is that kind of on hiatus right now? I mean, I want to give you a chance to do a little self-promo.
Right now I'm working on a few screenplays, sort of not writing comedy as much, but if people do like dark and dry humor, they can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Dark Dry Drew. It really is like the darkest humor though, so it's nothing
you gotta be ready
like
for
what
it.
You heard today.
Yeah.
Yeah, pitch black.
Yeah,
dark. Yeah.
Drew's on his good behavior when he's here, which we appreciate, but yeah, you gotta be ready for it.
That's right, so, yep.
So good. All right. Well, this has been great. We'll continue this discussion next week. You also had another topic for us to talk about next week. You want to give a little preview on that? Do you remember what you said?
Which one was it? I have a bunch written down. I don't even remember which one I told you.
Oh, that's all right. Well, when we were texting earlier, we talked about doing the food topic, but you also just in general said you've been examining beliefs versus reality. and how we don't realize when things are getting in the way. So, I mean, this may be like an extension of the food topic, but I was thinking definitely. That's where we're going next week, right?
Yeah, well, that sounds great. Yeah.
All right, so that's where we'll go. We hope that they'll all join us. I'll see you in a week, Drew, and we'll hope that you'll all join us next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.